Well, boys and girls, good morning. Good morning. It's March the 29th, 2014. Saturn's Day. Yeah, got that sound up a little high. Yeah, here we go. And I'm going to put another canned show on here today because I still got a lot of coughing and sputtering and so forth. I don't know. I don't catch a cold or the crap very often, but when I do, I usually get it pretty bad, yeah. One thing I did want to talk about was this stand your ground law. This stand your ground law is causing a lot of problems. It sounded good to most of us in the beginning, but I got to thinking about it last night, listening to some other people talking about it, and I think that they should just go back to having regular self-defense, that you have the right to defend your body, yourself, your property, and like that, because this stand your ground is getting, I know the right wing love it, because they think it gives them a right to do about anything. Well, let's face it, folks, we don't have the privilege of doing about anything. There's a whole lot of racial people in prison that found that out the hard way. Our problem is we've got the ruling class. They're not going to have a problem with it. Then you got the suck-ass people that cling on to the ruling class. Then you got the working class that sort of don't really care much about anything. Well, they care about things, but not what we're caring about. And then you go on down, you got us. And we're white separatists, but we're not advocating going out and just killing people, just to be killing people because they're not white. And the stand your ground thing, I think, is causing way too much trouble. Now, it's interesting, there's a black woman in Jacksonville, Florida. Her husband was beating on her pretty bad, and she took a gun and shot a warning shot in the ceiling of the house. Seems pretty fair to me, but she was arrested, and she got sentenced to 20 years. 20 years? She didn't shoot anybody. So I think this a lot of standard ground stuff is going a little bit too far. And I don't want to be lumped in with the right wing, because anything with a gun's okay with them. And I don't want to be lumped in with the left wing progressives who want to take all the guns away, or they think everything will be peachy keen, even though they're griping every day about fascist government and everything else, but they're out to get the guns picked up. That don't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me, you know, like the Jews, you know. You think the Jews would want to be armed to the teeth, man. But hell, a lot of the Jews are in on trying to say, oh, we ought to all turn in our arms. Well, that's really a moronic position, especially because of the times they've been through and so forth like that. So anyhow, I wanted to warn you, stay out of this fight about stand your ground. We've got too many people in the right wing that are gun happy. They'll carry guns around, and at least a little thing will happen, and they'll start shooting. Most of these situations they get into can be avoided. The fellow that pulled into the mini mart with his girlfriend told the blacks to turn their music down. Evidently they did, and then he went in the mini mart, came back out, and they turned it back up. Well, he just started shooting, putting 9 slugs in the side of the caravan or whatever they were driving. So my position is that's crazy. You're not going to win in a situation like that. Not that you couldn't handle these people, but you want to go through all that paperwork and have your whole life destroyed just proving something to a carload of Negroes I think not. I think you should watch where you pull off to do business in the first place. You see a bunch of savages walking around. I say go on to some other place. In other words, most of the people in prison that are white, and they talk about white being a white racist, they got themselves in there over just doing something stupid, you know, like, I don't like what you said, so I'll shoot you, you know. So I don't want that kind of white racism to be around me. I want to be around very clever, very smart, very well educated as possible, and so forth. And you're not going to go out and some little thing happens on the street and you start blasting away. And you can't win. You can't win those deals. Even if you win your gunfight, you're going to go away. And every one of these things I've seen so far could have been handled with pepper spray or mace. Now, I have not seen one of these deals that got into a big court trial or somebody being shot or killed that couldn't be handled with pepper spray. And it's a hell of a lot better for you than going apeshit and shooting somebody and end up in prison for the rest of your life. Does that mean you're a coward? Hell no. That means you're smart. You know, I think I'm fairly smart. And I don't walk into situations and get involved in situations that there's obviously no way you're going to win. And, I mean, I've been all over the place, and I don't have problems. I mean, I can walk down the street, and blacks or Mexicans or whatever, they can look me, and I look at them and just walk on. I have not had anybody attack me except... Well, out in California, at demonstrations, I had them attack us. And then the one time in front of my house, these crazy Mexicans that were all drunked up decided they were going to give me trouble, and I just pepper sprayed three of them in the face, and that was the end of that. They took off. So this is another thing about the right wing. We got to stay away from this crazy stuff. And we get dragged into it. They think we're like that. I hear the progressives always talking, you know, they don't seem to think there's any difference between people, white people. You know, there's smart white people, dumb white people. There's right-wing white people, and there's lone wolves. And whenever you get a chance to straighten them out on the subject, tell them that. We're not into that right-wing NRA, give me 50 rifles in my back of my car and a bazooka and all that crazy stuff. And if anybody listens to this show think that's where we're at, no, it's not where we're at. We are very much private people. Keep our powder dry, as they say. Be ready for almost anything. But don't overreact. And I know that... quite a number of the Muslims got that message from me that we're not going to go off half-cock and just start shooting black people. There's no future in that. You know, down the road a ways, we'll probably have something really bad break out in this country. And be ready for that. But don't go out in the street and don't go out drinking and go out and think you're King Kong on the street, because it don't work. And don't dress like... Put away all the racial t-shirts. Put away all that stuff. Cover up your tattoos. And you can go around and grow your hair out. You get along. You can get along in almost any situation. But if you make yourself a target, and if you're arrogant and... getting people's face over everything comes along, you're not going to last long. So anyhow, so when you hear these right-wingers talking about, oh, the stand your ground law is so wonderful, no, it's not. It's not good. We had laws here, self-defense. And, oh, sure, sometimes you get screwed even with a self-defense law. But and you notice they put this together down south. The crazy-ass guys down south are pushing this stuff. They love it. Yeehaw, man, give me my shotgun. Oh, you looked at me funny. Bam, bam. You know, that's crazy stuff, and we don't want any part of it. So, anyhow, this my little short statement here, and I'm going to run a show for you that I did with Stray Dog. I think it was last year. So, I'll be back with you Monday. I'm trying to think if anything's cooking here that I need to talk about. Otherwise, I don't think so. No, I guess that's it. So anyhow, here goes the show, and 14-5, and carry pepper spray. Don't carry weapons. Don't carry guns. Even if you've got the license to pack a gun, I don't think it's wise. I just don't think it's wise. In all my 35, 40 years of activity in the streets and out of the streets, I've never had a situation that I had to use a gun. Never. So, that's the way it goes.
Over. Nothing is over! Nothing! You just don't turn it off! It wasn't my war! You asked me, I didn't ask you! And I did what I had to do to win, but somebody wouldn't let us win! And I come back to the world, and I see all those maggots at the airport, protesting me, spitting, calling me baby killer and all kinds of vile crap. Who are they to protest me, huh? Who are they? Unless they've been me and been there and know what the hell they're yelling about.
It was a bad time for everyone, Rambo. It's all in the past now.
For you! For me, civilian life is nothing. In the field, we had a code of honor. You watch my back, I watch yours. Back here, there's nothing.
You're the last of an elite group. Don't end it like this.
Back there, I could fly a gunship. I could drive a tank. I was in charge of million-dollar equipment. Back here, I can't even hold a job. Fucking guys!
They're not going to beat us down no more. They're not going to burn us down no more. They're not going to shoot us down no more. Because if they do, we're going to do what Mike did. We're coming at them with everything we got. And I'm saying they're consolidated right now. We got to do any more burying in the graveyard. They better get out their shovels. Because we're through taking punches. You don't win a fight taking a punch. Nobody ever won a fight taking a punch. And you see what this says? This ain't a bunch of letters like any other union. This says fist. And that's what we are. Every guy in here, a fist. One fist. One fist. One fist. What are you?
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, where we have 43% of the corn crop in. And over in Illinois, they're ahead of us. They must get up earlier in the morning because they've got 51% of their corn already harvested. How about that? We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the show and other donations that you'd like to part with. And we'll go from there. And this morning, bright and early, on October the 22nd, we're going to talk to Stray Dog. Good morning.
Hey, top of the morning to you. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. I got up a little late today. It was only 30 degrees here.
30 degrees? Boy, you hit the cold air early. We haven't hit it here yesterday.
It'll be there tomorrow or next day. You know how that goes.
Yeah, I try to be like the Jesse Ventura battalion and try to swim every day. I swam yesterday in the ocean, and it was warm and beautiful. The Atlantic Ocean, one of the last oceans that is not poisoned.
Wow, man, that seemed to me like that would be pretty cold in there.
It's about 65 degrees, but...
Holy moly!
I'm able to tolerate it. There was nobody else swimming, but I...
Well, that's good. That's good that you can tolerate it. Hey, how's Fat Tony doing? I see he backed down on the same-sex marriages or something back there.
Well, isn't that something? That's just all eyewash. This thing where all of a sudden now the system is going to allow, quote, allow queers to make a civil union or marriage, whatever you want to call it, where they're just selling themselves into slavery. What did mankind do before the system so-called recognized your marriage?
Well, let me tell you something. All you have to do is get enough people clamoring for something in this country and just keep clamoring day and night and crying my civil rights, my human rights and all that, and the ruling class will bend, except for us. They won't bend for us because there's no money in it for us, for them, for us, right? Racial separation is not profitable.
Well, see, whites are still perceived to be on top. 96 million voters elected Obama in two cycles. So what you're seeing is a lot of negrophilia. People are nigger boarded. Like you say, every time you turn on the American TV, you see a ugly, thorn-nosed Negro looking at you or a mulatto. And it's not something I want to see. Now, if you turn on Russian news, Russia Today, it's like every person you see is a beautiful person, a man, a woman. You're not getting nigger boarded. So, what you're seeing is there, that's just a conditioned response. The population is like, so this queer thing where they say, oh, queer marriage, that's just a conditioned response. People say, oh yeah, allow it. But well, like you explained, they're just selling themselves into slavery, you know?
Yeah, well, actually, you commented on whites on top. They are on top. The whites have always been on top. I mean, the ruling class, that 1 or 2%. So when the Negroes and all of them say the whites are on top, they're correct technically.
Right. We see what kind of jobs that the Negroes excel at. They like to work in fast food places. They like to be garbage men.
No, they all want to be rap singers and hip-hop and drive around in gold-plated Cadillacs.
Oh, you know what? The older blacks, when they hear that kind of music, even they stand it. Like, that's the only the younger niggers like that rap music. The older blacks, they cringe at it.
Yeah, and but they're dying off. They're dying off. The old boys, you know, that got some common sense.
There's too much fried chicken. They can't help themselves. Look, you can eat fried chicken once every 2 weeks or so, once a week. These people are eating fried chicken every day.
They wonder
why it kills them. Well, then they wonder. They wring their hands.
Well,
the
poor ones eat fried chicken all the time. Not the. You know, we've got rich blacks in this country. We've got billionaire blacks in this country. A lot of people don't seem to understand that. They're heads of record companies, all kinds of things like that. And I guarantee you they're not eating fried chicken every day.
Yeah, but what are they doing with the money? We see what a large amount of money will do to a black. Look what happened to Mike Tyson. It ruined him. When he was young and hungry, he could fight. He could beat anybody because they kept him hungry. Once the Negro achieves that success, that effect can be seen in the Mud Nations more than anywhere else. But white people, if you give white people money, They'll be productive. They'll do something with it. That's why I totally agree with the Swiss, what they're doing, giving every Swiss citizen the equivalent of 400,000 Swiss franc.
Well, you know what, though? I'll bet you any amount of money that within 5 years it'll all be back in the same hands. I don't agree that white people are going to do right with money because look at them. They win the lottery and within a couple of years, they're broke and destitute or committed suicide because most people, no matter even what color they are, can't handle money. If you're not born into riches, it's likely you're not going to be able to handle a newfound bunch of money. That's just basic.
Yeah.
That's, you know, pretty much historical. So I could take and give a guy down here at the bar 10 grand. And I'll bet you within a few months, it'd be back in my hands if I had some kind of a scam, if I was a Jew.
Yeah, if you get the right person that to, like, say, 10 grand, you could buy a dump truck with that and then start your concrete business or whatever. But I think a lot of whites are so low down now, kicked out of the middle class, that it's all independent business where you got to be like that. So, it's so hard to just make rent and make things like that.
Well, you got to delineate between, boy, that's easy for me to say. You got to separate the lumpkin proletariat from the proletariat, like Marx or Lenin said. The lumpkin proletariat, you can't do anything for them because they're not going to do anything for themselves except be parasites. The proletariat is the working class, but there is a class below the working class, you know, even among the white race. And they'll cry and moan and want this and that, but they're not gonna work for it.
Yeah, they won't move up. We see it here. The people that pick up iron and metal, they tend to be like all junkies with pickup trucks.
Yeah,
and they're not the kind of people you'd want as your neighbor. You know, like your.
I see a lot of them going by my house here on the way to. There's a scrap metal place here about a mile from my house, and. It's a shortcut past my house from between two major state highways. And I see them go by here every day with guys that look like they're on meth, all skinnied out and look real scabby. And they got a pickup truck or even a station wagon full of metal to take over there to get some money. And then they're going out and buy more drugs.
So that's really telling the cities are being dismantled. Like cities like Detroit, Trenton, Gary, Indiana, they're being dismantled piece by piece of salvage metal.
Just like before World War II, before the war with Japan. I mean, we were selling all that scrap to Japan, and there were some guys around the country who were saying, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't be selling all this scrap to Japan because they might make weapons out of it.
Sure. Well, so, the Japs, we cornered them in. We know about that.
We know about what drove them to do what they did. But still, it was bad people in this country that knew, could pretty well figure what was happening, and they fed the machine. If Japan hadn't got all that metal and so forth in the United States, how could they have built those Japanese Zeros? Like when I was over there in Japan, with John, my son, we went to the Shinto temple, and they had a little badge over there that people buy and wear around. It's a symbol. It somehow fits into Shintoism. It's like a little flower. And I said, well, where do these come from? And the guy said, well, they go out in the islands and get all these Japanese Zeros and Japanese weapons, and they melt them down and make these little symbols out of them, and then the people wear them around as their pride in the Japanese race.
Chrysanthemum. Yeah, that's their flower.
I guess it was, yeah. Yeah, so anyhow, that's the way that goes.
Once in a while, we'll see a Japanese Zero flying off the coast of New Jersey, flying the air shows. And one time, it was the most awesome thing. As we were on the ocean front, we seen an ME-109 and a Jap Zero flying together in squadron. I looked at the binoculars and I blinked. I couldn't believe it. I wasn't drinking or anything, but it was an ME-109 and a Jap Zero. Boy, I would love to fly an ME-109. They say they're real hard to take off, though. That's when they have the trouble. They're unstable.
Well, you know that Japanese Zero was a superior fighter plane earlier in the war until we finally caught up with it because they were so light and fast.
Jap Zero could make a tighter right turn. So when he had a bogey on his tail, he could turn right and then get on his tail.
Uh-huh.
And, what a great... if you study the air war, I didn't really read on the Pacific air war, but over Europe, the war in the sky, the everyday comings and goings of those pilots, what they went through, that's really a gut-wrenching story.
Yeah, a good friend of mine was a Luftwaffe pilot on the Eastern Front. He just died a couple of years ago, and I used to try to pump information out of him, but he was very reticent to talk. He, not that he was afraid to talk, he just didn't want to talk about it because he was one of the last ones out that was able to get out of the East before the Russians overran the bases and so forth. And so he told me all about it. And I've told this story before. He said he was flying there on the Eastern Front, and a Russian plane fighter attacked him. And he got up close, and he saw it was a young kid. He was just, you know, a teenager. And he knew that the war was pretty well lost and the whole bit. He just waved the kid off and didn't shoot him down.
Yeah, you hear stories about that where a lot of times the German pilots would sneak up right behind the earth, and they'd be on their tail for miles, and the guy would never know because that's your one blind spot.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's a lot of stories. The air war in Europe started in, 38, 39 in Spain. That's when Adolf Galland was a fighter squadron commander, and his mechanic wanted to put a big iron plate behind his head one time without him knowing, and he got in the plane. He's like, "Oh my God, what'd you do? Take this out, take this out." Mechanic says, "No, you need it there." The next flight, 250 caliber rounds hit that plate and didn't kill him because that plate was there. So that's how lucky you got to be.
What a waste of money and people and materials and all that. War is terrible.
Yeah, they were fooled. Hey, a lot of people who joined the Third Reich were fooled. I mean, think about it. If you were a fighting age at time around there, you know, I know I would have joined, I'm sure. The real deal, you know?
Well, it's
the
easy.
The thing is,
it's easy
we got
to
make, next time we got to make sure no more Mr. Nice Guy and that it gets taken care of. You know, that's the main thing.
It's easy to get teenagers all excited and join up to do about anything. Now, I know I felt that way when I was 18 and joined the Army. I was ready for anything. At least I really wasn't ready for anything. I just thought I was. But their sense of adventure and everything, it's easy to get them to become cannon fodder.
Well, that too, they need a job too. It's not like I'm sure a lot of those kids didn't have somebody, a relative or somebody in town saying, "Hey, kid, you come here, I'm going to train you on this industry. You know, you're this, we need you here for production."
Well, there were tens of thousands of young whites from the farms all over the United States and the South and everything that they had food, they had a place to live and like that, but they ran to join up simply because false patriotism, I'm going to fight for my country.
Isn't that the last refuge of a scoundrel?
I want all the old bastards to go fight, you know. In any war, the congressmen, the senators, the kings, the queens, and all them should be out front. You know, there was a time when they were riding out front with a sword, but that's what we need. But you see, you can't do that as long as the ruling class is the ruling class. As long as you can't minimize the power of the ruling class, it goes on and on and on and never ends.
Well, the perception is they're untouchable. I mean, look at what the Congress did. They imposed a law on us for health care, which I'm supposedly have to sign up now for this law, which I'm protesting. I'm not signing up for no...
You're stuck between a rock and a hard place, though, Stray Dog.
Yeah,
corporate medicine is just as corrupt as federal medicine. I mean, you go... The corporate medicine... And the hospitals and so forth, they're ripping the hell out of people. So you go from one rip-off into another rip-off. So in other words, you can't win. They've got you between a rock and a hard place no matter what you do.
Hey, like a caller, older gentleman from Connecticut called C-SPAN's Washington Journal. He says, "Look, I already have health care. It's my local emergency room. I don't often have a problem, but if you do, you know, you cut your arm open or if you hurt yourself, you know to go to the emergency room. It may be a weekend. It may be your doctor's not always there." So this idea that, oh, we have to get health care, there's people not protected. They are through the emergency room.
Well, there's 30 million Mexicans that aren't covered. I mean, maybe maybe 20 million of them are not covered, and then they're bringing all their in-laws in from Mexico and South America, and all the chinks are bringing their whole families in and everything else. Everybody wants to get on this free ride.
Yeah, to be fair, though, it's not only them. It's people from the Soviet republics like Georgia and Poland. We have a lot of those immigrants here. Some of them are undocumented.
Sure.
So,
sure.
So they're, you know, they're the better people. Naturally, that those are the immigrants we want because they're of much higher quality than any mud person.
You know what? I don't think we need any immigrants. I think we should have stabilized our population in 1950.
We need these Polish women that come over and from Eastern Europe, the former Soviet republics. They come and take care of the dying and elderly. And that's what we've seen, hundreds of jobs, old people who have no family, don't want to take care of them. They'll pay these women, and it's a pretty good job. They get to live in the house. They care for the old person until they die. And that's what jobs that they're filling.
Well, I think under a CCC-type program in this country, like in the 30s, that we could develop all those kind of people we want to. It's just that... here again, a lot of them are living in as lumpkin proletariat and just, you know, being parasites, and they could be forced to learn a trade and do something. It doesn't take a hell of a lot of brains to take care of a senior citizen in a hospice or something.
Yeah, that's what they usually do. The towns will refit old factories like they did over here, old Campbell Soup on Mott Street. They brick building, and they put it pretty nicely. I did work in there a couple of times, and they'll put the old folks up in there, but there's only so many spaces that they could make.
Well, so, you know, culture, it takes a long time for culture, even within the white race, to develop in one area of the world, and that culture is very, very sensitive. It's very fragile, and even among whites, it's not good to move hundreds of thousands of people from other countries that live under a different culture and different habits and move them into your situation without affecting your culture.
It creates culture shock.
Yeah, no, you can't expect some Polish guy or woman to come in here and realize what we realize about our history and all that kind of stuff and react about things like we would about our history because they come from a totally different culture. So even among white people, you got to be careful. This mass migration of people, no matter what, is dangerous. And we should have stabilized our population in 1950 and closed the borders.
I don't know about any numbers because I never studied it, but I understand during the early 60s, all the race restrictions were taken off the table. In other words, and what was it, Johnson in 64, he allowed all immigrants from all the mud countries to enter.
Well, Kennedy was in on that too, so don't let John Kennedy off the hook.
Okay.
The Kennedys were up to their neck in that stuff, you know?
Yeah, why did the Irish tend to be like equality mongers? That's the thing, like you meet a lot more equality mixer Irish than you do the nationalists. Maybe that's because the racialists. I think a lot of racialists have already adopted the lone wolf ideological concept just to stay alive and to kind of take the fire off them. Like, you don't want to put a bullseye on yourself.
Well, also there's a sort of a myth that the best people immigrate because they're looking to better their life and so forth. But most of the time, they're interested in bettering their life easier. And so you're going to find that people, many times, who immigrate are not the top of your race. They fled because they either would not rebel in the country they came from or something like that. So that's why a lot of the reasons why the Irish feel the way they do. Of course, a lot of the Irish that were under the heel of the Catholic Church, that has a lot to do with it too, and the hatred of the British and the Scotch English that the British shoved into Ireland. So, see, that's all culture shock, and it gets very confusing.
Right. How about Australia? That was a penal colony for England. They sent all the people who misbehaved in Ireland there.
Yeah, they did, but they, you know, and from other places too. But that was an interesting experiment. It would be interesting if they had a bigger island someplace and take guys out of the American prisons and put them over, white guys out of American prisons and put them on this island where there was enough to eat, and if you worked hard, you could build something. Because a lot of times there's prisoners that are in a prison today that would have been at the top of the list 100 years ago. They'd be revered, you know, like a Jesse James or something, you know.
Oh, hey, wherever you put a white person, you drop them off, they're going to create and be better. Even the dullest white will be usually better than the smartest dark-skinned person.
Well, look at our friends that are in prison, in there because they defended their race. I mean, there's nothing more natural than that. Or they struck out at the racial enemies. So these are the qualities you want, and qualities we should want to break them out of prison. You know?
Yeah, it's of no fault of their own that they're in there, some of them. And you know what? I don't attach any shame to that either. What I attach to it is honor. And how I'm thinking is, you know what? It's just going to be a matter of time before they say, you know what? Racism is illegal. And you know what? You're going to be jailed for your prior writings. I still stand behind what I believe. You know, I'm not going to flip.
Well, that may be a blessing in disguise. I've always said, until we get our back totally to the wall, we're not going to have too many people come out swinging. I think government oppression builds what we're trying to do and trying to say.
That's it. That's exactly it.
I mean, you know as well as I do, if the government really came down, almost all the right wing would disappear overnight. They would bow their knee to the king. The very ones that are talking about revolution and rebellion and killing their enemies and all that, I mean, if they really had to go on the run and all that kind of stuff, most of them would cave in. And nobody knows how a person's going to react to that until it happens. I mean, you don't know, I don't know, we think we know, but none of us really know.
That's right, it's stress, and everybody handles it differently. There's certain things to always remember, you know, keeping quiet. You can't go off by staying quiet.
Well, Joseph Paul Franklin, I've been talking about quite a bit lately, and of course they're planning his execution. I say if they execute him, they'll make him a real martyr, and he'll go down more and more in history than he would 100 years from now. He'd probably be like the Jesse James and John Dillinger type thing, where people respect him, you know. And I think he did the natural thing for a white man to do, faced with the problems that we're faced with.
Well, Larry Flint's a sleazeball. He's that Hugh Hefner on steroids. These men, they lure these young white women and take pictures of them naked and then sell it. They're selling flesh. They're prostituting. They're pimps. That's very dirty business.
Also, he was promoting, of course, child molestation, and mostly against white kids. So Chester the Molester, I remember that cartoon of his. So it's not only race mixing he was guilty of, but it was promoting child molestation. He said he didn't want to see Joseph Paul Franklin die. He'd like to get into the cell with a pair of cutters and pliers and torture him. Well, I think Franklin got his, he won, because here, I think he may have meant just to maim Flint and not kill him. So he's stuck in that goddamn wheelchair for the rest of his life. So I think that Joseph Paul Franklin won that situation, no matter what happens to him.
What kind of firearm did he use against them?
Was it a rifle
or a handgun?
I think it's in the book Hunter, or one of these books tell about it. I don't know whether it was a 30-06 or something, but you see, Franklin was an excellent shot, even though he only had one working eye.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Yeah. And how he did that, I'll never know. But anyhow, he was But I got to thinking about that maybe he aimed to just maim him and screw him up and not kill him, because killing him would have been easy, you know.
Well, yeah, you never know. Once that bullet leaves, you know, you think you get a good shot and you don't. It's not easy.
Well, Vernon Sharp, you know, is too bad.
Try hitting moving targets. Like, that's the whole thing about the Kennedy thing. Anybody that shoots, you know, that's a deer hunter or shoots birds, knows how hard it is to hit a moving target. And there's just no way that one man could have shot Kennedy that many times with a bolt-action rifle.
Well, it's pretty well the information's out there now, who did it and why and all that stuff, but they'll never do anything about it. They don't do anything about anything like that anymore. I mean, there's all kinds of people who've been killed by government people and the whole bit, and CIA, and they're never going to go to jail or anything. Just like they got hearings on today about drone killing. Well, sure, they're going to yap about it and cry about it, but nobody's ever going to go to prison for it.
Hey, before I forget, we got to talk about the shutdown. Wasn't that great? I know it was just like an eyewash, but I don't vote for the Tea Party or anything. I don't vote, but wasn't that great that they were able to shut him down? But they see they back down at the end. But here's my thing. I think that's going to make the Republicans even stronger. That's the best thing they could have done, because now their constituents say, yeah, look, I voted for these guys, and they threw a wrench in the works for so many days. You heard all the public, the federal employees crying, oh, we're going to lose our house, we're going to lose our thing. They were only cut off for, what, 20 days of pay?
Well, the important thing is they didn't shut down the military part. They didn't shut down the so-called Defense Department or any of that kind of stuff. They only shut down one part that had to do with more or less taking care of people. You know?
Listen, this was a tremendous game for the Republicans, and the press just played it off. The press was playing it off like, oh, Obama's doing the right thing. They boarded and barricaded up open-air monuments such as the Lincoln Memorial and Veterans Memorial on the D.C. Mall, and that showed the meanness and the contempt of this so-called Negro president that was going to bring us change.
Well, didn't the Republicans ask for that? They said that we want to save money, and so Obama says, okay, we'll save money, and he started closing down everything. I mean, you know, now here's my position on this. The Republicans were stupid. All they had to do was say, okay, it's the law. Go ahead, Obama, and do it. Okay? Then when it collapses, the Republicans could pick up all the marbles, but they led with their chin and did some stupid crap, and got the public against them, because the media was able to help do that. When all they had to do was step aside and say, "Go ahead, Mr. Obama, if they were sure that this Obamacare was going to collapse, and it collapsed, well, then they'd have picked up all the marbles. Now they got to fight from their way back in the heap, and they got to fight their way back to the front. Now, what you say could possibly be true, but it's going to be hard for them to regain that public support.
That's what the media is letting out. Like, people are angry at the Republicans, but what we're seeing is that a whole new crop of Ted Cruz candidates.
Oh God, I hope not.
And
those are conservative right wingers, stray dog. We don't want them. We don't want them. We don't want them. We get rid of them. I'd rather just be between us and the liberal Jew Democrats and get the Republicans out of the way.
Yeah, this was a desperate game. I wouldn't say desperate. I think this was a calculated gamble to shut the government, because that's going to energize their radical base, the ones that think that the Republicans are actually for the working man, when you and I both know they're for big business.
Right. Remember, most of these guys, like that they're pushing to the front now or running to the front, are supported by the crazy evangelical Christian Zionists, and that's where they get most of their support, so they can say some pretty weird things. And let's face it, just because a bunch of these Republicans don't like the Democrats, don't make them right on other things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there, this guy, what was his name you just mentioned? His name that made the big speech. The one that did the one you just mentioned. Anyhow, he's riding high now, but.
Cruz.
Yeah, all they have to do, he's got a bunch of people in Texas that think his crap don't stink. And then you got some of these others too. Rand Paul, he's not near as radical as what everybody thought he was going to be. He's going to meld right into the same old bunch of people. That Mitch O'Connell from Kentucky, that guy is weirdo, should be tried and sent to prison. We have no dog in the fight. They're all rats.
Yeah, that's agreed. We got to let it come down, everything. But, hey, did you hear the story? Washington, D.C. baby boom. White infants and toddlers are the biggest increase. They're reporting a 34% increase in the number of white babies.
Good. Good.
Yeah, that's great. If you can believe the census, because like you said, black people can list that they're white.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. Half of these Mexican mestizos are going to say they're white, you know. They'd like to be white. But anyhow, you know the Red Lobster restaurants?
Yeah, it's a chain store.
Yeah, well, there was just recently a black waitress that claimed that a customer wrote nigger on the invoice kind of meal, and she made a big deal out of it, and then she put it on the internet when the guy denies he ever did it, and he probably didn't do it. Now, that gal, just from putting that on the internet, she was given $10,000 in donations from the dumbasses out there in the internet land, with no proof whatsoever that it ever even happened. Now, that just shows you the negrophilia and how bad our... I'll bet you 99% of that money came from white people.
It just gave me an idea. I'm going to go out to eat later. I'll get a red crayon and write cracker on mine.
It don't work that way, my friend.
The door don't swing that way.
It don't swing that way, man. But anyhow, just think of that. Now, here's a better idea. You get some black person that you know that like to make some money and say, look, you work here at this restaurant. I want you to fake this thing and put it on a white customer's deal and then sue the restaurant. You get a bunch of money and we'll split it. Huh?
Get some black shit.
We got, you know, our people don't think devious enough. Yesterday I said they had a sheriff up there that has to do with Leith, North Dakota, and he was bragging about how, well, if I can handle the bikers in Sturgis, Michigan, I can sure handle a few of these white supremacists. And I sent him a note back on the internet, and I said, well, you might not be handling them too well because we've got a lone wolf in your office. I dare you to try to find him. So we got to start using our brain, you know, like up to, you see, what Craig's doing is the tip of the iceberg, and he's getting a lot of press, and that's good. But I'm below the waterline when I operate. Now, Craig did give me a lot up there, I wouldn't go to any kind of a rally up there or anything like that. Not because I'm afraid to, but it's not the way I operate. So I will use my underwater operations with this iceberg. And that's what most of us should be doing, not leading with our chin and waving flags. But it's okay to have some people out there doing that because they like to do it and they're going to do it anyhow. So, and they do get a lot of media, and people think, oh my God, there's white racists around. Yeah, well,
Craig Cobb handled himself excellent when that Negress was interviewing him.
Oh, he's a very smart guy.
He, oh my God, did he just handle? I watched the first 20 minutes, I think, and it was just awesome. Look. We whites are already building communities, like he said, and that's exactly it. His going public, that's just a template. But his plan, which is a lot of people's plan, is already in action. Do you think for one moment I would be here in the ghetto, in this black ghetto, if I didn't have a network of whites around me where we're all watching and got our feelers out? it's safety in numbers, the only way you survive. So what Craig Cobb is making public is an actual survival tactic to where you're safer in the numbers together.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people have been doing that for years. I mean, you know, the right wing always expect everybody to write everything down and send them a newspaper. But we've had people doing that stuff for years that have moved into small towns and set up networks and so forth. In fact, it goes all the way back to the Minutemen in the early 70s. They were doing that. People were moving out of Southern California into the mountains and all over the place. And a lot of them lived and died up there, but there's still their kids are up there. So there's a lot of smart white people. They don't belong to any group. They may not even agree exactly what we believe in, but they're white and they're with white people. So what else do you need? You know,
there's all different tactics in the country, in the city, in the cities. Now we're not going to hang placards on our street saying this is a white street or this is the muds ride by and they look and they see how everything is neat and clean and there's white people there. So believe me, the muds know about.
Well, that's the problem with the right wing. They would hang a sign up on the street and say, this street's all white. I mean, you know, that's the problem with not... I call what I do, and I've called it for years, I call it jiu-jitsu. And that's to use the weight of my enemy against himself. And that's what, of course, got me a lot of television recognition in the old days and all that kind of stuff. And the only way they could shut me up was not talk about me and not put me on TV or the radio. I mean, you know, they won't even say insurgent. You know, I send to these people who write these articles. I say, I haven't been war for 10 years. We've been the insurgent. But why won't they use the word insurgent when if you change from Standard Oil to Shell, I mean, they'd change the signs and everybody'd talk about it. But they don't want to use the term insurgent. It's really interesting. So, like I've always said, you just sit down like politics is like a piano and propaganda. You just keep plinking away with one finger until you hit a note where everybody in the room goes, shut up, you know, and that's the one to keep plinking, you know.
How many people even know what insurgent as a term means? You have you scrambling to get at your dictionaries, and this is why they don't use it, because when people look up insurgent, what it says in the dictionary, they're like, okay.
If you're on the
subterfuge.
If you're on the internet, there's hundreds of things about the insurgents. I mean, I've got this Google search and this other talk something search, and there'll be 50 of them every morning on insurgents. Articles that are appearing in newspapers all over the country, so that couldn't be true.
Yeah. Generally, when I talk to the public about insurgents, like, insurgent, what does that mean? That means bad guy, doesn't it? That tends to mean, I know they think it means underdog.
Well, that's good. That's good, but I don't care whether they say it's good or bad anymore. I just say... either we have the power and the strength or we don't. You can call it good, call it bad. Just stay out of our way, that's all.
Yeah, keep making comments on these newspaper articles that will allow you and make smart, concise comments. I try to make several a day and get it out there. You know, I like to call C-SPAN Washington Journal a lot and sound off a little bit.
I was listening to him. I was listening to him this morning. I usually don't listen to that. I used to all the time, but I was listening to him this morning. It's interesting. Some of the people call in are pretty smart.
Yeah, some blacks call in. They know what the deal is. They're like, yeah, the only blacks that are doing good under this president are the thugs, the drug dealers, and the thugs. The regular working class black is getting less.
You know, there's a. And the guy got a radio show. I don't know what stations he's on, but he's on the internet. Mark Thomas, who's a black, and he just absolutely goes ballistic if anybody talks a little bit white racist. And no matter what it is, whether it's guns, or NRA, or anything like that. And I was listening to him about 4 o'clock this morning, and two or three white guys in a row called up and talked a little just. Didn't even really talk that much race. It was, you know, like the guns and stuff. And he just He was slobbering and going ballistic. He was stuttering. I thought he was going to have a coronary. Anybody who gets that Mark Thomas, they should call in and pull his chain.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, when you call in C-SPAN to make a good comment, a racial comment, you could hear the next people calling, and they're all gasping for air and biting their lip. And
but this guy just goes absolutely crazy. I mean, you know, like I said, there's three guys in a row called up and just mildly criticized him. And it reminds me of the old days when Irv Rubin got a radio show for the JDL out in the valley in California. And through our connections, we knew everything he was doing. And one of the connections was actually a Jew. And he wanted to be with us, but we told him, you can't be with us, but you can help us out once in a while. So Irv Rubin came to him and just shake him down for money to do his radio show. And the guy came to us and said, what do I do? He said, give him the money. Give him the money. So he financed his radio show because Rubin was so bad. Everybody hated him that called in on his radio. So he did more good for us having a show that was supposed to be positive about the JDL than we could have ever done. And finally, they knocked him off the air because everybody called in. Even Jews called in and he went crazy if they didn't absolutely go along with everything he said. It was funny. We used to sit and listen to the show and laugh our ass off. And see, these are the things you can do, you know. Like we found out that Irv Rubin was getting money from certain people to do things. He was into drugs and stuff with the JDL. There was a big restaurant burned down there in the I can't remember the name of that section of LA where all the working class Jews live. But anyhow, somebody burnt down this Arab restaurant, and our guys were working in finance and, you know, with investment people and like that, and they were able to research that right after that, Irv Rubin got $11,000 deposited to his stock account, not the bank stock account, because you can keep back then you can keep that secret if you didn't want anybody to know where the money was coming from. You put it in the stock account. So anyhow, we knew he burned down the restaurant, but he never got charged with it. But
Jewish lightning.
And then also we tracked all these Jews down out there. Big shot Jews. We knew we had their credit card numbers and everything. That was 20 years ago. But, you know, I couldn't sell that to the right wing because, oh my God, I mean, you know.
Those Jews are so damn dirty. They got caught here in New Jersey a couple weeks ago in a some kind of ring to intimidate husbands to sign divorce, a favorable divorce paper for the wife. And the rabbis were behind that, and they would kidnap the guys, the husbands, and beat them up. And so the Jewish mob is alive and well. I mean, selling the organs? They would harvest the organs here in New Jersey, and then ship them to Israel illegally.
The whole bunch of them is a conspiracy, a mob. It's not just a few. I mean, some of the worst ones. This JDO guy mentioned on a tape that I ran the other day from the old days when they threatened to, they had a contract to kill me if I won the Democratic, if I won the congressional seat. But he said there's a book out called, this is a long time ago, Jews and Gangsters. Wait a minute, what do you call it? Jew gangsters or something, that is a history of how they used to send out mob guys to beat up German boon guys in New York City and all that kind of stuff. Jewish Gangsters in Crime, I think it was called. I've got to try to find that book because I never did read it. It might have some stuff that was even newer in there of how they, I know they went down south and, threatened to kill Klan leaders, stick a gun in their mouth and stuff like that. And that's the trouble. When they came around to a town, they'd have been easy to identify New York Jews in Mississippi. Well, they should have just killed them. I mean, you know, don't give them a chance to put a gun in your mouth. Just kill them. You know?
Yeah.
but they didn't do it, and those guys, some of those Klan leaders ratted out the other Klan people because of threat from the Jew mob. Of course, the Jews were quite powerful in Jackson, Mississippi. That was one of their beachheads down there. Most people don't think about that, but they were, in fact, they put up, the Jews in Jackson put up the money for the, donated to the FBI, and you can do that, and they're the ones that got Kathy Ainsworth and Tommy Terrence when they gunned them down.
That's the state capital, isn't it, Jackson?
I think it is.
See, that's where any state that where it's the state capital, then you get like the federal influence, the Jews are a lot more prevalent there.
Yeah, but that, and like I say, that was all Jew money that got them down there in the FBI to set them up, and some of the local cops were in on it too, or state cops. So,
hey, it's easy to bribe somebody if you got a stack of $10,000. Can you imagine? I mean, that's the nature of money. It's very dirty.
Yeah.
It's very.
That's right.
I've never seen a stack of money like that in my life. You know, like, can you imagine offering that to a working man and saying, hey. You know, such and such. You know, what do you? It's almost like a mesmerization, like where you get like a big gold nugget,
yeah.
And you take it out, and the guy looks at it, and he's like, like his eyes go goo goo.
Oh, Tommy and Terrence, he was shot up real bad. He didn't die, but then he went to prison, and while he was in prison, like they all do, they found Jesus, he came out and became a pastor of a church back east on the East Coast, and I think it was last year he died, but Kathy Ainsworth was the real lone wolf, almost lone wolf female, the she-wolf. She went in blasting with a machine gun.
Wow.
So anyhow, back in those days, there were a lot of heroes, and we're resurrecting their memories, like I've been playing Orrin Fenton Petito's work from, I think it was some kind of Lighthouse, Florida or something. There's all these old guys, and I'm digging up all the information on them. A lot of them I knew, that nobody gives them any recognition or credit today at all. I mean, the right wing. You know, that's why it's so worthless. They don't, there were a lot of guys that gave up their lives and were injured and beaten and shot and sent to prison and everything else that they're forgotten, and nobody even talks about them anymore.
Yeah, so that's when the struggle was in the streets. Struggle was in the street a lot more then. Now, just by nature dictates that everything go lone wolf.
Well, remember, you probably don't remember Connie Lynch. Most people wouldn't, but Connie Lynch was the one who created the riot in St. Augustine when they tried to integrate the beaches of St. Augustine. He was from California, Connie Lynch, and he had a brother, too. But I talked to a guy once that knew him and met him someplace, and he said, motioned him to come over to his car, and he opened up the trunk, and it was full of machine guns.
Awesome.
So anyhow, yeah, Connie Lynch wasn't afraid. Connie Lynch was just as strong, if not stronger, than George Lincoln Rockwell. But he doesn't get any credit by these so-called Southerners.
That's when to stop it. That, like you said before, we needed to stop that then, before integration. That's when the big push should have been. Now that it's integrated, it's going to be hard to put it back the other way.
It sure is. It sure is.
You know, that's the whole thing, and that should have been a state issue. That's why people know the federal government is just so more than we need, redundancy on redundancy with this government thing.
Well, those guys down south, they had the right idea, but they aimed wrong. They should have gone after the guys that were coming down from Washington to persecute them. And forget the blacks right offhand, some of the agitators, big deal. They should have gone after the crooked businessmen in Mississippi, the crooked people at the top. Even the governor turned out to be a rat. And then those federal people came down there, they should have shot the shit out of them all. And then,
if you care about your place, you would.
If you're going to go to jail or be gunned down, why not make it count? I mean, you know, shooting some black dummy along the road is not a revolution. That's not going to change things. But boy, if big shots start dying, that gets their attention real fast.
Well, it makes them feel unsafe, and that's what. And if they feel the big shots feeling safe, they'll hopefully start making better decisions, and that's the idea, you know.
Well, sure. I mean, it works in foreign countries all the time. They have a pack of guys that go out and start doing people in, and suddenly the leaders, a lot of them, start saying, "Well, let's make a deal," because there's no bigger cowards than are in the ruling class. People don't realize that. They're cowards that have other people do all their dirty work. You know.
Well, they've been softened up through money. Money, their whole life made them soft, where they don't have to get their hands dirty.
And it doesn't take hardly anything to scare the shit out of them. They'd have 50 if you threatened one, they'd have 50 FBI guys surrounding the house 24 hours a day because they got the money to do it, you know.
It's special protection. Those in the society that are deemed to be higher ups, the ruling class, they're given special protection. You couldn't even say boo to them. That would be an arrestable offense, where the rest of us have to live and work around these mud people who threaten us, who invade our property, who crowd us out, who stump our productivity. And we're seeing the nation being more divided every day, which is great.
But the whole world is getting that way. The whole world is tired of this shit of the capitalistas running amok among them, you know, occupying their countries, droning, killing people in the streets, getting away at CIA doing all that stuff, and the history of all that crap, and how we overthrew a legitimate president in Iran way back, and all that kind of stuff. The whole world is getting pissed. And many of them, they're not going to have maybe modern weapons, but they'll crawl over your wall with a knife in their teeth and slit your throat. That's what's coming. Worldwide uprisings.
We're putting in place now a fleet of robots, hunter-killer robots that fly over our skies, that will be the compliance officers for the New World Order Edict. And they do not have sympathy. They do not have compassion.
We won't either.
This is all,
we won't either.
Yeah, but
let me tell you something, Stray Dog. Anything that goes up can come down. I was involved in some partially in countermeasures in the military. And whenever there's one thing comes up, you have to think of a better thing to counteract it. And believe me, there's a lot of low-cost solutions to high-tech. And they're doing it all over the world. I mean, in every country in the world where there's uprising, they're using low tech, and they're beating the U.S. military.
Save and stack up old microwave ovens. In a time of warfare, you put on a microwave oven in certain places, and the radar sensing drone senses that as a radar site.
Oh,
so you could put that. That came across on one of your intels too. That's good to remember.
You know, I send out so many every day. I sometimes barely get to read them myself.
I was trying to dig up the one where it showed the specific frequencies that the drones operate on. One of our associates had that, and at the time I didn't have ink in my printer, so I couldn't print it out. But I'm going to try to find that one and print it out, because it's good to have an RF generator.
Well, remember, though, the drones are directed from some little guy sitting in an office up in, you know, Dakotas or Wyoming or someplace. So, there he is, and he has to go home at night, and he has to do like all of us, drive to work and drive home. Now, what if these drone operators just started being bumped off? I mean, you know, maybe...
It wouldn't have to be that dramatic. What you do is you create a cone of high RF frequency jamming signal that irradiates from the ground in a cone-like structure. The drone flies over that. It'll just nosedive right down.
Well, I think they'll probably figure a countermeasure out for that problem. It may work for a while, but I think the old-fashioned way would probably work better. I mean, you know, if a guy got so scared that he wouldn't even drive to work or drive home and quit, they could keep putting them in there all the time. But if they're all scared, I believe low-tech's going to turn things around.
Yeah, them drone operators back at the base in some bunker, they drive themselves crazy by looking at it, and they know what they're doing is wrong. And like the Bradley Manning came forward more, you're going to see a lot more of those guys come forward.
Well, what if what if deep cover guys would become drone operators and fly the drone over there and bomb the military headquarters and stuff like that? I mean, you know,
we call that a drone malfunction.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's Assad and all of them. These are our heroes. These are. A lot of people don't recognize this, whether they're racist or not. Assange and Snowden and all these guys are heroes. Manning are heroes. All these guys that are whistleblowers, and we should always support the whistleblowers.
Let's not forget the tremendous, to say a word on the environment, the tremendous damage done by the Gulf oil spill, where the company BP injected Corexit right in the wellhead, 5,000 feet below the water. So what that did was it made the oil sink to the bottom.
Yeah.
And now this oil has contaminated the Gulf, and it's making its way around Florida up the Gulf Stream. Right,
yeah,
on the bottom.
Yeah, and they're
the
already they're I forget what fish it was, not a fish, oysters or something, that they're down to about a third of what they used to get, and a lot of these things that have shells have holes in the shells and everything else, and that stuff is appearing up channels and up rivers 40 miles north of the Gulf. I mean, we haven't even begun to know the damage those bastards have done. And like I said, BP should have been nationalized immediately. Every goddamn piece of machinery they had should have been nationalized.
We wondered why BP wasn't punished, and we found out why. Because BP is the United States government.
Sure.
BP is the British government.
Yeah.
They're the largest supplier for our navies, both Britain and the United States. So when we talk about an environmental damage, the people of Louisiana, they've just lost their way of living, and there's no going back. It's 3 years on now.
Their health is being affected too, because I saw one where a guy, his family are getting all sick, and he sold out, moved out into the west in the mountains and built a new house. But the day before, the government fined this big bank $15 billion or something like that. And everybody says, "Oh boy, that's good bullshit." Those banks, you could fine them $100 billion, they pay it off cash. People have to go to jail. These bank people and CEOs, they have to go to prison. I mean, not for a year either in a country club. They got to be do like I think the Chinese do it over there. They take care of them. I mean, that's what has to be done. Nothing's going to happen as long as these guys can steal the money from us and then pay the fines to the government. They're not going to stop doing what they're doing. They're going to just do it a new way, you know?
And I'd say they'd get part of that fine money back. They'd end up getting it back through subterfuge.
Sure they do. They get it right back. They got a million ways. That's it. But nobody's ever punished. Nobody goes to prison. They just write a check. Look at the Miner family down there in West Virginia that were responsible for those 25 or 30 miners dying in the mine, and people didn't get hardly anything from it. And they just keep, there's all kinds of citations against that McCready family, I think it's a McCormick family or whatever, and they just pay the fines and then go right back to doing what they're doing, destroying the environment and chopping off the top of all the mountains and the crap running down into the streams and everything else. Nobody pays for anything. It's going to start, and once that first domino falls, you're going to see it all over the world. These people are going to be hunted down and taken care of, and it's not just going to be a racial thing at all. It's going to be everybody around the world is going to get pissed, because there's only 1 or 2% of them, and then there's all the rest. You know.
Yeah, they can't keep all the plates spinning up in the air at the same time. The rich know that their time is numbered. We're going to eat the rich.
Yeah, and they're too stupid to understand that there's a time to back off. You're going too far. They never will. It's like that story I tell about the guy that hunt the Barbary apes over there, and he put an apple in the middle of the cage and just big enough slots in between the bars where the monkey could get his paw through there and grab the apple. But the guy come back days later and there the monkey would be screaming and yelling, but he wouldn't leave go of that apple. That's the capitalist. They're so goddamn greedy, they're going to die in the end because of their greed.
Well, they're going to squeeze the consumer class for everything they're worth before it ends. Oftentimes, the machine will do its best just before it fails, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, and a lot, and this Snowden and these guys that are releasing whistleblowing this stuff, and this is great. This is the greatest thing that's happened so far. Look at the French now. The NSA took millions of private names and numbers from the French, and now the
70 million.
And the Mexicans, they did it to the Mexicans. You know, these people are people all over the world are getting really pissed.
So they're looking for a few individuals, and they're scanning the whole database.
I think we're going to be entering into a great new day. Myself, I'm not negative. I think it's going to be great.
This last year has been very exciting as far as things moving forward in the agenda we want. So that's what's good, and keep positive, you know.
Stray Dog, we're coming to the end of the show. Last comments, please.
Well, thanks for having me, TT. It's good talking to you, and we're going to keep on keeping our forward observation post manned and getting ready for winter. We're going to expect snow soon.
We're going to keep on trucking, right?
Keep on trucking when we can.
14-5, right. And what do we say?
14-5. At the end, shut up. Talk to you later.